You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, according to federal data, Wisconsin has the sixth highest high school graduation rate in the nation, but has the largest gap in graduation rates between black and white students. We'll talk to an education reporter and get the details.
First, a power struggle between liberal and conservative values as part of everyday life this election season. For many people, it feels like the most polarized we've ever been.
In fact, it's nothing new. In 1950s Milwaukee can be a case study in seeing the gains of one side being opposed by the other, and the echoes are still being heard today.
Tula Connell describes the tension in Wisconsin's largest city in her new book, Conservative Counter-Revolution, Challenging Liberalism in 1950s Milwaukee. She joins us now from our Milwaukee studios. Tula, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So set the scene for us. It's Milwaukee, 1950s. What was life like in the city and how was it being governed?
Milwaukee in the 1950s has a reputation of being very progressive and very socially expansive. And the mayor in 1948 was Frank Seidler, a socialist. He was a self-identified socialist, and he served until 1960 and throughout the 50s. And Milwaukee was heavily unionized. One third of the population was in a union. And so if you look back and you think about Milwaukee, as a lot of people may do, they envision a very progressive environment. But in fact, Zeidler, throughout his three terms in office, was challenged by conservatives on housing and on everything from big issues to little ones, like whether the city should have a public television station.
And so you said there was this undercurrent, in this strong socialist, what seemed like very liberal city, there was this undercurrent of conservatism rising up and looking toward the future. Can you talk a little more about that?
Well, following World War II, historians call the New Deal era was very much a part of the entire national environment, and that involved the policies and the practices enacted under Roosevelt, such as Social Security and expanded rights for workers under unions. And in 1949, the Federal Housing Act passed, giving cities and states federal money to create affordable housing. So all of these policies were very socially progressive, and that was the environment of the nation and Milwaukee. And some people, some conservatives, wanted to change that. They wanted to take that back. And in my book, one of the conservatives whom I highlight, who's on the far right, was William Grady, an industrialist. And he explicitly said that the conservatives like him need a 50-year project to take the country back to where it was before the New Deal.
And this 50-year project was quite visionary at the time, because that's a long time to look to the future. I want to ask you, how did conservative media also get started during this time, and what was the Facts Forum?
In the 1950s, there was a lot more labor press, foreign language press, but slowly that began to go away. And what replaced it were a lot of alternative conservative publications, such as the Facts Forum. That was started by Hunt in Texas, but it was a national publication, and it reached people in Milwaukee and around the nation. And it was sort of a precursor to what I would think of as an internet mobilizing tool. In the publication, which came out every month, Hunt encouraged people to write their congresspeople, to write letters to the editor. He paid them if their letter to the editor got published. He encouraged them to set up local communities and where they could talk about the issues. And so it provided a network for people who felt alienated by the New Deal policies and who felt alone in their conservatism. And in providing a network, of course, you get strength. And so that and other forums, there was the Mannion Forum, which is a very conservative radio show. Those started in the 1950s. And in fact, William Grady was a precursor of conservative media. He bought several suburban weeklies around Milwaukee, including Wauwatosa paper at that time, and so was able to supplant the historically strong labor voices and foreign language press.
We're talking with Tula Connell. She's a labor writer and historian, lives in Washington, D.C., and is the author of Conservative Counter-Revolution, Challenging Liberalism in 1950s Milwaukee. And Tula, during this era, you found that the far-right conservatives were able to bring young people into their fold. How did that influence their long-term 50-year strategy for furthering that conservative agenda?
That was a key part of their strategy, and it started out slowly. It wasn't as expansive as it has become. But, for instance, William Grady supported a freedom school in Colorado started by a conservative, Robert Lefebvre, and the school was very far-right, very libertarian. And Grady funded scholarships for students from Marquette and the University of Wisconsin to go to the school and take two-week courses in economics, very conservative economics. And it was funded by people like the Millikens in North Carolina, the textile magnates, and it drew high-level economists such as Austrian economists who were very conservative from the Chicago School, and it was not a small operation, but it was just the beginning of educating young people, and they saw that as crucial to changing the mindset of the public, which actually supported government by a large margin, supported unions by a large margin, and they wanted to turn all of that back to supporting business.
So fast forward now to today's election and Donald Trump's mantra of Make America Great Again. Are you seeing his messaging and things, ideas he embraces that trace back to these 1950s conservatives?
Well, Donald Trump doesn't represent a direct embodiment of the lineage of the Republicans from the 1950s. Ted Cruz would be more in line with that. I think Donald Trump's is sort of spinning in his own parallel universe. I do think he's drawing from a lot of disaffected working class people who don't see their issues, especially jobs and economic issues, being taken seriously in the Democratic Party. And Trump is another phenomenon. But the lineage of the far right, like Grady's followers, would end in a Ted Cruz rather than a Donald Trump.
So where does the counter-revolution go from here? Do we wait until Election Day to know what happens next? Or are you seeing a new path forward for conservatives that is informed by what went on in the 50s?
It's hard to say as a historian to predict the future. I prefer to
stay
talk
in the
about
past.
The past, right? I think I was speaking last night and someone asked me if Grady's dreams and vision had come true, and I think it's come true far beyond what he would have imagined possible in the 1950s. In the 1950s, conservatives, especially far, far right conservatives like a Grady, were not taken seriously by the large majority of the nation or the city, and to have their issues pretty much take over Congress, I mean, many of the far right are in Congress right now, is something I don't think Grady and his business friends would have imagined.
Tula, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you again very much. It's been a pleasure.
That was Tula Connell, a labor writer and historian who lives in Washington, D.C. Her new book is Conservative Counter-Revolution, Challenging Liberalism in 1950s Milwaukee.